you know, where it's just
like immediately be okay with these like newfound unstable magic powers.
Right. And it's like, oh, I touched this magic. Like, oh, hey, I can cast shield now and some other stuff. And yeah, that's cool. And everyone's like,
I'm still me.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed, but magic when appropriate.
Yeah, that's not great. You did give some great advice, Kevin, that I feel like we should end all of our multi-classes with. Don't forget to have fun with it. That's some good advice right there.
What a banal statement. If you're not having fun, you're probably not going to enjoy yourself. That's what we always say here on Monsters and Multiclass.
I thought it was dunk on your players at every opportunity.
That's the actual As a DM, you give your players sorcerer powers and put them out for like a week. Oh, you can cast shield, but your eyes don't work anymore.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Borgel.
And I'm Will Noble.
And we'll be hanging out here for the next hour to talk about anything and everything D&D related. This episode, we're taking a look at the Rogue Sorcerer Multiclass, and then later on, our teary final Summer of Frogs episode with the Grungs from Volo's Guide to Monsters. So pull up a chair and stick around for a while.
You know, we might need to tweak that intro again. We lost the weekly part, but now you're saying hour for the next hour. I don't remember the last time we had an episode that went for only an hour. I think we're like hour 20, hour and a half. So could you be more specific next time?
We'll be hanging out with you for a while.
No, that's more general. And we're like, we'll be hanging out with you for the next hour and 23 minutes.
Just dub it in afterwards.
And, yeah, then we have to really stick to it. We'll be hanging out with you for the next 98 minutes.
All right, so our multi-class today is the Rogue Sorcerer. Requirements for multi-classing are going to be Dex 13 for the Rogue and Charisma 13 for the Sorcerer. A Rogue is the Martial Opportunist. Their main class feature is going to be the Sneak Attack that just gets stronger and stronger as they go on and they find the weak point of their enemy and take that big hit. Where Sorcerers are the Charisma Casters. They get some spells, but not as many as wizards, and they're really mean all the time because they're Chad casters. First thoughts.
Bro, you usually ask one of us our first thoughts.
Oh, all right. Well, eeny, meeny, miny, Will.
So, yeah, we've got two equally insufferable characters, the Sorcerer and the Rogue. I think it's a good combination. It's probably not as good as the Bard Sorcerer.
Of course not.
But it doesn't.
What? That's not even like comparable.
Yeah, it is.
How?
I don't like either of those classes. They're fun to play, I will say that. But, okay. Yeah, I think it goes well together, especially with the kind of sneaky, getting into stuff nature of the Rogue and the mysterious nature of the Sorcerer powers. So that's pretty good flavor.
They have like similar, almost kind of just that mysterious background type.
If somebody was going to stumble onto magic, it's always going to be probably a rogue.
Like, yeah.
I accidentally became magic.
Right.
That's kind of a rogue thing, so.
Kevin, first thoughts?
I think there's some potential, and we'll definitely need to kind of suss it out here. I'm a little worried about if you're rogue and mainly rogue and going sorcerer, you're always comparing it to being an arcane trickster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sometimes hard to justify just not doing that. Where if you're mainly sorcerer and go rogue, there's kind of a lot of wasted stuff. So I think there's probably some cool combinations that could be done, but yeah, we'll need to work them out.
Yeah, definitely. We did a rogue wizard a little while back, and that actually ended up better than I expected because we did the arcane trickster and wizard as an option, and that like worked surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm.
Where you kind of lose what made that so worthwhile, where they used both intelligence for their spellcasting modifier. And this, you've got two different spellcasting modifiers, so I don't see Arcane Trickster overlapping with the Sorcerer nearly as well as Arcane Trickster with the Wizard.
Right. Yeah, it would probably be a waste to go Arcane Trickster Sorcerer, except for the fact you wouldn't slow down spell slot progression as much, but it'd still be pretty slow.
And you get your cool mage hand.
Yeah.
So that's some benefit.
And then, depending on how far you go in it, then you get stuff like magical ambush and things like that, which is cool.
It takes a while, though. That's kind of the hard part with rogues, is to get any of the subclass features, you've got one at third level, which is usually a good place to jump off.
Spellcasting and the Mage Hand Ledger Domain. Yeah.
Right. But then for anything else, I think it's ninth level.
Ninth, and 13th, 17th. Yeah. And they're all great. Ninth level, if you're hidden from a creature when you cast a spell on it, the creature has disadvantage on saving throws.
That's really good.
And so that's not arcane trickster spells. It's any, so it would apply for sorcerer spells. 13th level... Oh, yeah, the versatile trickster. You could use your mage hand to basically give yourself advantage on attack rolls.
Oh, right.
Which is fantastic, but it's not until 13th. And then the spell thief, where you could steal the use of a spell and be able to recast it and stuff. So, I mean, they're great abilities, but if you're multi-classing, you're probably not going to see them.
Right. One of my issues with that versatile trickster is I believe it's an action to cast mage hand. So and it only lasts for, I think, a minute. So
as a bonus action on your turn, you could designate a creature within 5 feet of your spectral hand created by the spell. Doing so gives you advantage on attack rolls against the creature until the end of your turn.
Right, but it
once
you
cast it.
Yeah, it sounds like you need to have it up already. It says at 13th level, you gain the ability to distract targets with your mage hand. So,
oh, I see. Yeah, so yeah, it's an action to cast it. It lasts a minute.
Right.
It's not concentration, though, I don't think.
No.
No, so it's... You can kind of almost always have it going.
But once again, that's... All well and good, but does not matter at all for the multi-class.
No.
No, that's true. But, you know, giving yourself advantage on things is always nice, especially as a rogue.
Yes. So, which does lead into one nice combination, and I'm hoping you took note of the user. Someone on Reddit mentioned it.
yep, I do have it written down.
Wild Magic Sorcerer, even just one level dip into it will get you Tides of Chaos. That's the one where you could choose to give yourself advantage on something. And then it will reset after a long rest, or next time you cast a level one spell or higher, the wild magic surge goes off.
It's not when you cast the spell, it's when your DM actually wants you to... Oh, okay, you're saying it's when your DM decides that you can get Tides of Chaos back.
Well, it's based on a spell casting. It's saying the next time you cast a spell, instead of rolling the d20,
right,
the wild magic surge goes off, and then whenever a wild magic surge goes off, it resets Tides of Chaos.
Gotcha.
A little bit of a weird one.
Right. But that was Arivar 27. Might be pronouncing that wrong, but they commented on one of our Reddit posts, and I was like, yep, we're stealing that. But
for the record, you actually both were half right. The DM does make the call.
Right.
So.
Oh, yeah. Any time before you regain the use of this feature, that feature being Tides of Chaos, the DM can have you roll on the Wild Magic Surge table immediately after you cast the Sorcerer spell first level or higher. Then you regain the use of the feature. Usually with Wild Magic Surge, after you cast a spell, the DM tells you, hey, roll a d20, and if a 1 comes up, then you get it.
Right.
But that's when it's really common. I'll see it. People just kind of set up predetermined rules of what this happens beforehand, because otherwise that's pretty rare. The DM to have to remember, and then it's still only a 5% chance even when the DM asks you to roll the d20.
Yep. It just slows down the entire combat. I mean, really everything, because anytime you cast a spell, it should come up. It's not that great.
What?
I'm
not worried about it. It doesn't slow down combat that much. It's just a d20 roll. No more so than like a bard being about with cutting words. And
I guess it slows down combat in a way that doesn't feel like it has any value. When a bard slows down combat to say, hey, I'm going to cutting words that, it's because something is happening. Where with the as written way of Wild Magic Surge, 5% of the time something happens, and the other 95% of the time it's just a wasted roll. That's
Would you change it so it doesn't? Usually what I see where people homebrew are where it's every time the sorcerer casts a spell of first level or higher, roll a d20, and then on a 1 a Wild Magic Surge comes up.
Right.
As opposed to the DM having to remember to occasionally tell them to make the roll. That's usually what I see. So that doesn't really change anything, slowing it down. And again, it's just a d20 roll. You could roll it at the same time, even.
That's true. And that's probably a better way to handle it, right. That's for sure.
As written, though, it is waiting or bugging your DMs like, oh, do I have to roll now? It's like,
right.
Yeah, that's why people just hand wave it and say,
yeah,
it's
just like, do it every time. Yeah, just roll it every time. And then if they cast Tides of Chaos, it's guaranteed the next time you cast a spell.
Right.
It's a common way I see it.
That makes sense. So one of the nice things about this dip is that regardless of Arcane Trickster, you can get Booming Blade from going into Sorcerer.
Right.
So we've talked about this probably a couple times in the past couple episodes, I feel like. Booming Blade mixed with a martial class is fantastic. Booming Blade was a spell in, I believe...
Xanathar's?
Okay.
For sure.
And it's a cantrip that allows you to make a martial attack. If it hits, the enemy is basically locked down. They can't move or they take damage. As you level up, level 5, they just take additional damage. Level 11, as cantrip scale, they take 2d8 damage. And it's really great when you can combine that with a martial class and a spell casting class. It just really stacks up how much damage the rogue can do.
Right. Yeah, first of all, Booming Blade's actually from Sword Coast Adventure Guide. Screw that up. Doesn't matter. But yeah, they're not a rogue. It's amazing because they never get more than one attack. Right. So it helps scale that attack. And it will still trigger sneak attack if everything else is applicable.
Right. Because, you know, the issue with rogues is that they just don't do enough damage. You know, so.
It's on par.
Whoa, it's on par. Oh, it's justified. No, you just
get. Said the guy who played a paladin last time.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I had limited resources. A cantrip happens whenever you want it.
Right.
My resources are limited, says man who's never gone beyond 50% spell slots.
That's not even a little true. I used so many spells as a paladin. Oh, that was usually pretty rough, actually. That was your job as a DM to make it really difficult for me to go the entire long rest without using all of my spells.
Yep.
So, yeah, but I mean, so with Sorcerer, though, and Rogue, even just that like small dip into Sorcerer, I feel like there's a lot of really useful low-level spells you can get from being Sorcerer. Shield is always going to be worthwhile. Absorb Elements as well. Something that, you know, it's a reaction, I think, to cast Absorb Elements.
Yeah.
So even like a small dip into it is going to give you a lot of just small utility, combat utility spells, even if you're, again, avoiding Arcane Trickster.
Right. That does have to be taken into account, though. Arcane Trickster satisfies that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say, if you don't want to be an Arcane Trickster, if you want to be an assassin or a thief or a scout or a swashbuckler or a mastermind or whatever, but also still have a little bit of magic, multiclassing and a sorcerer is a good way to do that. Get yourself a Booming Blade, a couple other good cantrips, a couple early level utility spells. Yeah, go Wild Magic for Tides of Chaos or whatever, or Draconic Force, a little beef toughness. But
I think it really just comes down to flavor with which sorcerer you want to go through.
Yeah, but Tides of Chaos for a rogue is really hard to ignore.
Yes. No, that's definitely great. Giving yourself advantage whenever you want it, basically, is going to be really, really good.
Yeah. Well, I guess it wouldn't be whenever you want it, because unless
whenever the DM allows it.
But let's say even we play it where it's homebrewed, where the DM will just, if you do use Tides of Chaos next time you cast first level sorcerer spell or higher, it resets. You're not going to be very high in sorcerer with how we're talking here with this build, so you're going to be limited on your spell slots. So it's still going to be a few times per long rest anyways.
You have to cast a spell to get it
back. Yeah, first level or higher. Well, yeah, cantrips do not trigger Wild Magic Surge.
I feel like you're not going to be that limited, though. I mean, a sorcerer...
But it's not all... Like, there's a lot of attacks made in a long rest, especially, you know, if you're, like, running a dungeon or something. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're going to have advantage on half of them. If you attack 20 times between a long rest, 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah, at most, because of the... just saying, if every single spell you use it to get Tides of Chaos back, you're going to have 6 in a... long rest, even. I guess
if you're what level?
Third. Yeah. Okay. So that's at low level, saying mostly rogue. You take a small dip.
You could get this though from one level.
You are correct. If it's first level, then you've got two uses of it, and not even any meta magic to gain any more. Not that you'd gain that many. At third level, you could use meta magic or no font of magic. Where do you get the meta magic points?
Second level.
Okay. So you can start that at second level, and you get an additional spell, which gives you 4 uses of it per long rest. Not really great. So you're going to give yourself advantage a couple of times when it's necessary.
Yeah, so I would use it when you're not getting sneak attack.
Right.
So I guess we're assuming everyone knows sneak attack, but just in case, it's the rogue staple, really. It will trigger if you have advantage on the attack, or if there's an ally within 5 feet and you don't have disadvantage on the attack. So rogues being able to give themselves advantage of the sneak attack is really great. Because a lot of times you're just going to get it anyways, because you're fighting in a party and just trying to position yourself accordingly. But then it is really nice, you know, 4 times per long rest to be able to kind of give yourself that sneak attack.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And then a Wild Magic Surge, which can be really good.
Yeah, I mean,
it can also kill you, but...
For the most part, Wild Magic Surge works out in the player's favor. Now, if you're casting Fireball on yourself, it's... not working out in your favor.
Right.
But wait. But the rogue gets evasion.
Exactly.
At 7th level, I think.
So at 7th level, you can completely ignore your own self-fireball.
Right. Well, not completely. If you make the save,
if you make the save, you take no damage.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, you cast fireball at your feet, and I don't know, you just jump up real high, I guess. One that we haven't mentioned to get away from the wild magic surge sorcerer, shadow magic. I feel like it's just such an obvious flavor choice for rogue, like a assassin and shadow magic, or really any of the sneaky ones. Just the ability to cast darkness using 2 sorcery points that you can see in the darkness is giving you advantage on every single attack. So that's a great way to give yourself advantage. Now, that would mean you'd have to be at, I think, so 3rd level to get... No, I'm sorry. Shadow magic happens at 1st level.
No,
you get the darkness spell at 3rd level. So you have to go up to 3rd level for sorcerer for that combo. But then you can really only do that once per day.
But so pretty much for an encounter, give yourself advantage.
Unless you're turning your spells into sorcery points and using that to cast darkness. So you can take your spells, convert those into sorcery points, cast darkness another time. So, I mean, that would be like a pretty good... Basically every combat, even at 3rd level, maybe not everyone. It depends on how many you have in a day. But standard amount of combats, 3 to 4,
right?
You'll be getting it most of the time.
And that's one where it's saying you could spend 2 sorcery points to cast a spell. And if you cast it that way, then you could see in the darkness.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you're in darkness, you're considered, if you are the one in darkness, you're considered, everyone else considered blinded to you. And so your attacks are advantage. If they're in the darkness, they're blinded. And then your attacks are at advantage.
Right. So, I mean, that's a fantastic combo.
That is,
that just gets better with time.
Yeah.
That's the classic Warlocks
combo. Right.
Now you get to throw a rogue sneak attack in with it.
Yeah. So, I think that's a huge amount of potential. Minus the fact that it is a 15-foot sphere, and every DM in the world is going to just immediately have everyone run away.
Yeah, but I mean, depending on what you're fighting, some things are going to be a lot smarter about it than others.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's up to your DM, I guess. But if you're fighting bears, a bear's not going to be like, ah, it's dark. I'm sure it's not dark 15 feet away. They're going to be like, oh, it's dark. What's going on?
I think I can smell well.
Yeah, that's true.
You could also cast it on yourself. And then if you're like, use a longbow, if you're a ranged rogue, you cast it on yourself. I'm pretty sure you would still get advantage on your attacks on things outside of the sphere.
Yeah.
Because they can't see you. So you basically almost treat it like you are invisible to them.
Interesting.
Right?
That makes sense. That'd be pretty good, actually.
You can do that. That's another thing.
And then any attacks on you would have disadvantage.
Right. And they'd have to, if they were melee, they'd have to run into your darkness where you're like, I got you right where I want you.
Right.
You know, so yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets ready. Usually with darkness, it balances out. Like if nobody could see in the darkness and you cast it on people fighting, it balances out to no effect, basically, other than shutting down spell casting where you have to be able to see.
Right.
Because the attacker cannot see the person they are attacking, so they have disadvantage, but the person being attacked cannot see the attacker, which would then give the attacker, whatever, advantage, and basically cancels out, but...
Yes.
What?
But who's on first?
So advantage, disadvantage, cancels out in darkness. Even dark vision cannot see through magical darkness. And I think that's, I feel like something that'd be pretty easy to forget. So casting this on, you know, a bunch of drow or one of the other 30 races that have dark vision still shuts them down just as well. So it really takes true sight, blind sight, and this miscellaneous thing of being able
advanced
to just see in
dark
it.
Vision.
I don't think that's a thing.
That's what it is.
Does it say advanced dark vision? No, it's called Eyes of the Dark.
That's really lame. What's the warlock one?
The invocation? Or is that it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see in magical darkness.
I don't remember. It's
another really dumb, edgy thing. It's really great.
It's flavorful. Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
They're not going to name something advanced dark vision. Dark vision mark 2.
Yeah. Imagine if they did something like advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
That's actually how they used to name things.
What? I had no idea. Thanks for the history lesson. So I think that would be a pretty good dip into Sorcerer, and it's kind of up to you when you want to stop with that, because the higher you go in Sorcerer, the more sorcery points you get, the more times you can do that per day.
Right.
You're just mainly holding back your sneak attack damage.
Exactly. These are two classes that really benefit from
every
focusing
level.
On one. Yeah. Right. More sorcerers get more sorcery points. Rogues get their sneak attack. So it is a little tough to delay that.
Right.
And speaking of sorcery points, then their other main use of, instead of converting to spell slots or whatnot, or casting darkness if you're that type of sorcerer, the meta magics. Mm-hmm. There could definitely be some really great meta magics for rogues. Just for flavorful purposes, like subtle spell. A rogue being able to do subtle spell just sounds perfect.
Yeah,
the range spell where they could cast something from really far away for like an assassin. Yeah, like a firebolt where it will double the range or something.
Yeah, 240-foot fireball.
Yeah, bolt. Yeah.
Firebolt. Yes. Yeah, that's always good. I mean, metamagic's always great. I think that one of the limitations of metamagic is that same thing of it gets better as you level up. Because at the start here, at third level, it's like, oh, I can do like one thing per day, maybe two. So, you know, when you're level 10, it's like, yeah, basically every spell I'm going to metamagic and do something interesting with it. But at those low levels, I don't know how great it is. In comparison to using it for the darkness, which is, again, a very specific instance, I don't think you're going to find anything as good except for very specific instances. But if you were like, you know, Draconic Origin, and that was just what made sense for your character flavor-wise, then, yeah, metamagic is going to come in. Subtle, I think, is perfect. Twinned is always going to be good. Just being able to cast the same spell twice. Great.
Right. So we've been doing a lot of talk on rogues dipping into sorcerers. What about the other way around?
So you get a couple of things. I mean, rogues are never a bad dip. Well, I guess usually not a bad dip. The first three levels, they get sneak attack, which doesn't really matter. Expertise, so you get some more skills.
Mm-hmm.
Thieves' cant, which is pointless. Well,
no, you don't get more skills. Expertise doubles your proficiency on skills you're proficient in.
Correct.
Which is very nice.
Is a really good first level dip because your proficiency bonus scales regardless of your class level. It's right. Your overall level. So, I mean, you know, you take a one level dip at level 9, you now have plus 8 to the skills that you put expertise in on just the proficiency bonus.
Right.
I think it's plus 4 then. Then you get cunning action at second level, which is the best use of your bonus action of like any class.
Right.
You can
dash, disengage, or hide as a bonus action.
Right.
Which is great.
Right.
As a rogue, I'm playing a rogue paladin right now. I use it almost every single turn.
Right. I mean, just the movement increase of being able to dash as a bonus action is useful, again, almost every single time. Disengaging when you are squishy as a bonus action, fantastic. I mean, there's nothing bad about it, that's for sure.
Right.
Third level, your sneak attack goes up to 2d6, so it's starting to be something, but you're still probably going to be better off with a cantrip.
Yeah. Most if you're of the time, mainly a sorcerer, that's the biggest thing. The sneak attack feels wasted.
Right, right. And then you get your roguish archetype, which, depending on what you go...
Yeah, like if you go scout, the first scout, skirmisher, if a creature ends its turn within 5 feet of you, you can move half your speed, and as a reaction, the movement does not provoke opportunity attacks. That's great for a sorcerer.
Yeah.
Just get out of the way, and then still be able to use your cunning action for something else.
Right.
To dash and go even further or whatever.
I would expect that to be more of a flavor choice than something that I'd like base my entire class around, though. You know, like I wouldn't like start my character and be like, I can't wait until I get that third level rogue ability for scout where I can run away easier. I mean, at second level, you're getting something near that. It's not as good, but I mean, Storm Sorcerer gives you something to get away from people as well. It's like a little bit different. It's not about their movement.
What's nice about this is it's a reaction.
Right.
So if you're just using cunning action, the person gets their entire turn. They run up to you and their turn within 5 feet. They get their attack. Then on your turn, you can disengage as a bonus action. This one is you just use your reaction before they even have the chance to attack.
It's when they end their turn within 5 feet of you. So they can still move and make their attack.
I misread that. It's so, turn, not movement.
So that's what I'm saying is it's like, it's not bad, but I'm not.
You're right. No, actually, that's a lot worse than I thought it was. Okay. That makes a very big difference.
So
it's also an incredibly lame skill.
being able to run away better.
Yeah, it's like whenever anybody gets up in my grill, I can freak out as a reaction and run away.
I mean, it's really, it makes a lot of sense if you're a ranged rogue.
It's so lame.
It is. So I wouldn't base my entire class around that. If it made sense flavor-wise, great, because you're also getting survivalist, which you gain proficiency in nature and survival if you don't already have it. Your proficiency bonus is doubled for any ability check you make that uses either of those. So you're getting something on top of it. This isn't one of those, or this is one of those rogue subclasses that gets two things instead of just one. So it's making up for it a little bit. And it's very flavorful. You are a scout. You are a rogue who likes nature as well. Why you didn't go ranger? I don't know. You wanted to slow down your spell progression and not get cunning action, or and get cunning action. So there's reasons for it. I'm not seeing it mechanically.
Right. Yeah. That, like inquisitive again for roleplay reasons.
Which one's inquisitive? Stuff in there. That one always. That's like the spy.
No, no, that's like kind of like the investigator.
Okay. So mastermind's the spy.
Mastermind's a crime boss.
Yeah. Okay. None of them really like spies.
Why not? We should have a spy.
That's kind of more of the bard. Like Caladu Whispers.
Oh, yeah, that is.
There's multiple types of spy, Kevin.
Yeah. But he's kind of right. None of the rogues are, like, traditionally spies.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, the scout's assassins. Kind of a spy.
I mean, sort of. Okay.
There's like, a court like spy, and then there's the, like, never-seen spy. Like, Bard is the guy who can infiltrate with charisma, not stealth. You know what I'm saying, man?
Right.
Yeah. Well, except for also stealth.
Well,
they're
also
pretty,
stealth.
They're pretty good at things.
He can't kill them, like, from a distance, like, assassin style. So the assassin's got a little bit of spy, too.
Yeah, that's fair. Anyways, inquisitive. So, like, ear for deceit, whenever you make an insight check to determine if creatures lying, treat a roll of 7 or lower as an 8. Eye for detail. This is all at their level. You can use a bonus action to make a perception check to spot hidden creatures or an investigation check to uncover and decipher clues. Then insightful fighting. That's for the sorcerer. It's not going to make a big thing. It's a different way to give yourself sneak attack.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean... Yeah, it's flavorful is
yeah,
how I
exactly,
feel, you know,
yeah.
and that's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You're getting cunning action, and then you're taking one more for whatever this flavor thing is at third level.
Right. Yeah, all that being said, though, especially after realizing I was misreading Scout, I would probably just stop it at 2. I don't think any of these are really worth it unless you, for flavor reasons, for role-playing reasons, you have a strong inclination to pick one of these.
I do like the idea of Swashbuckler 3 and then Storm Sorcerer. Because
Swashbucklers are always on boats.
Because Swashbucklers are always on boats. As we've established, whether or not it's true, and it's not, Swashbucklers are pirates. And Storm Sorcerers love the ocean. And there's no way that you can play those characters any other way. I mean, that has to be it, right? No. Okay. So that is a good way to play it, though. You have a Swashbuckler pirate, Storm Sorcery... origin of whatever thing. Now you're getting your charisma modifier as a bonus to your initiative rolls, which is all right. But once again, you are getting another way to have your sneak attack, which becomes a little less useful. But what is nice is the fancy footwork lets you make the melee attack and then slip away before they can even attack you. So it's like right. If you make a melee attack, I think it's a reaction, you can just bounce. During your turn, if you make a melee attack against a creature, that creature can't make opportunity attacks against you for the rest of your turn.
Yeah, so if you still have your movement, you can just...
But that means you have to make a melee attack. With Booming Blade, I mean, even at third level...
Sure, but again, if you're mainly sorcerer, you're probably better off just doing a cantrip.
But what about, like, a third level rogue, second level sorcerer, storm sorcerer? So you can go in, you've got a bonus to your initiative... You make a melee attack with Booming Blade, or is that considered a cantrip? I guess it would still be a melee attack, because Booming Blade is...
Yeah, you're still...
You make a melee attack as part of Booming Blade.
Yeah.
So you go in, you use Booming Blade, and then you can run back. So...
Yeah, or if you're just a rogue and anything else, you just disengage
to do it the other way.
As a bonus action.
It's just better to, if you're high rogue and low sorcerer, you can still do all of that.
Right.
And you're
just, even if you're just rogue.
If you're just rogue. Well, no, you need Booming Blade.
You okay, Arcane Trickster.
Yeah. You're right. So that's the time, just go Arcane Trickster. But if you want to have whatever Storm Sorcerer does, which is when you cast a spell, you can move 10 feet.
Yeah. Or, again, just flavor reasons. It's your character concepts.
Mm-hmm.
You were born into a family of noble storms. But you're the token human.
You were born during a vicious hurricane.
Your dad's a cumulonimbus? I don't like talking about it.
And, you know, once again, you get some good spells at low-level sorcerer.
Yeah.
Arcane Trickster, you get some all right stuff, but if I remember correctly, you really only get one free reign spell where you're I don't have to be limited.
Yeah, level three when you take it. Two of them have to be from enchantments or illusion spell list, and then the other one's free.
Which are good utility usually.
Yeah, they're good spells for rogues, though. I was going through the spore sorcerer spell list, and I'm like, oh, that would be good to pick. Oh, that's enchantment. Oh, that's illusion.
Okay.
What the Arcane Trickster is missing is damage spells.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're mainly rogue, I don't think you'd want to waste your spell slots on damage spells. Just do your sneak attack.
Gonna have to agree there.
Yeah. So we've completely skipped over, though, role-playing. Why would this class exist?
Well, Sorcerer always kind of skips over the role-play.
Yeah.
That's Sorcerer's thing.
Let's not take the easy route out.
You found a magic book, and it gave you magic brain cancer. I don't know.
all the things that require agency, I'm feeling like Sorcerer is probably not the best one. Like if you specifically tried to steal a book that, you know, you like got locked into a shadowy pact, it's like, that's a warlock. That's not a sorcerer.
It is. I mean, you could play it as a sorcerer.
You can.
Yeah, especially with new subclasses coming out through like Xanathar's and stuff like that. There's you start to see some overlap between subclasses and other classes.
True.
I think for that specific reason.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
So shadow magic is an example of something that you could really choose why you got your shadow magic. Mm-hmm. Warlock, sorcerer, it doesn't really matter. The Shadowfell realm is connected to you.
The biggest difference is that warlock, it's generally you made a pact, so you made a decision for the most part, whereas sorcerer is you fell into this thing.
Yeah, born into it or...
Something.
You touched
something
that's really unstable and infused you with magic.
Right. And from that, you could really pull any of these.
Yeah. So another way to just put a little more interest to it in the development of the character, it could still be an inherently born thing. And we've talked about it before where, it just unlocks later in life. And that's why it happens later.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to make it an automatic unlock. It's the character has to overcome something. They have their inner demons and their flaws, which is blocking this part out, and through things they do in the story and cathartic moments getting closure on things and growing as a person, they unlock that part of them.
Man, where are you getting these PCs, man? Can I have some? No, you're totally right, though. You're totally right. It should and can be ingrained in the story, and it just kind of how you flavor those moments. It could work really well. I think that'd be great.
Yeah. And then the other way, sorcerer going to rogue.
Could make sense. I mean,
they had the rogue locked inside of them all along.
I've always wanted to steal stuff.
But my good nature has prevented me.
Now that the wild magic courses through my veins, I can just take stuff for no reason.
I guess you could, and a more like serious note of that, you could have it where this person, like throughout the story, they have an event that happens where it impacts them negatively. They don't develop, they develop. Nope, that's not the right word there.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
The opposite of character development.
Regression.
Thank you, that's it. Yeah, they regress. And they end up more kind of turning to the more kind of underhanded criminal things where they're utilizing the sorcerer powers for that and then pick up some various levels of rogue and whatnot.
Maybe kicked out of whatever they were in before because they have sorcerer powers? And people don't like that.
What organization is going to kick them out for that?
I don't know. I mean, if it's wild magic, then I could see actually a lot of reasons. Hey, you keep just waking up and your room's covered in spiderwebs. So, that's the plot of Spider-Man. No, that's a bad example.
So it could be a sorcerer who joins the military of their kingdom and they pick up like scout skills or something like that. So
right.
They get tied up in a criminal organization. You know, things like that. There's a lot of ways to
go
about
it.
That's another one where it would be an active decision. So kind of any of them I'm good with.
And I think like Draconic Bloodline always makes a little bit of sense because you get a lot of times it says the dragon bloodline shows in you. So if you're just like a person with a scaly face, people might think you're a freak. If people think you're a freak, that leads you to potentially underhanded things if you get, you know, again, cast off from where you're normally accepted.
Right.
Your family doesn't want any part of you because they're like, you know, just because your great-great-grandfather needed to sleep with a dragon doesn't mean that we need to sleep in the same house as you. So they kick you out.
Sure. Then, yeah. Just a scaly sorcerer on the streets trying to survive.
It's something. Yeah. Don't yeah. use the, yeah. oh, this is overly edgy voice when...
or tropey. It's, again, it's just, it's... You need like something. Even the stuff I was talking about earlier, where like the sorcerer unlocks the rogue unlocks the power in them later. I mean, that's super tropey.
Right.
It's even if it's not to save the world, it's still kind of like the chosen one type thing that was in them all along, and they had to overcome their inner demons to unlock it. Ridiculously tropey in storytelling, but it's D&D. You get to play it. You get to shape it how you want. Who gives a shit? It's, yeah. It'll be fun.
Yeah, and that's the thing about being able to play a trope in D&D is you can break it when you want to. You can just take it whatever direction you want. When you get bored of it, you can be like, this character doesn't want to do this anymore, and then just changes. You can change.
Right.
But as an origin, it works.
Yeah. Well, it's super cool. And the edgiest ever.
Which is how you like all of your characters.
Shadow Magic Assassin.
Shadow Magic Assassin. It's actually kind of cool.
It is. One foot in the grave, sending other people to hell. number six, you blinked once. Last week.
Oh, yeah.
The shadow, right. The shadow magic quirks.
Uh-huh.
The Table of Edge.
Probably some of my favorite quirks.
Yeah. Occasionally your heart beats. This is an act that that startles you. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that plus being a rogue, I mean, you're gonna spook some people.
Yeah.
If that doesn't put you out on the streets, I don't know what will.
No, you're comfortable there. You don't even know what love is, you know. You just sit in a clock tower completely still, aiming your heavy crossbow for a week. And then he pops out and you're like, dunk, and then you walk away. It's like, you don't even talk. You don't even mention it. It's like no big deal.
Now, then you teleport away.
Then you teleport away. Exactly.
That's the sorcerer part. Otherwise, you're just a rogue.
And there's like black tendrils when you teleport.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's more like a portal opens up and these black tendrils like come out and like wrap around you and pull you in with a scream.
Yeah.
I mean, I especially love the edge added at sixth level with their Hound of Ill Omen, where they get a dark dog, just a shadow
like
dog.
Like an evil dire wolf that harasses people.
Right. So it's just like he just doesn't talk to anybody, but every once in a while he's just like, come here, Jeffrey. And then just the dog just hounds someone down. Oh, it is Hound of Ill Omen. That's not good. Hate when I do that.
You also gave him the name of your old roommate.
Just a quick name. It's fine.
Yeah. What would be a weird name? I don't know. Somebody I know personally that is not an evil demon dog.
He's not?
No, I've never seen him stalk anybody, and I don't think he can walk through walls either. That'd be cool. That would have been cool.
All right. So what other mixes do we got here? I mean, Divine Soul, I don't really think that works too well with rogue.
I don't like that one.
It's a healing one. You know, if you want to be a rogue and also get some healing magic.
It feels odd. I'm sure somebody has an idea where it works, but just initially it feels a little weird to push that into a rogue.
Right. But beyond that, I mean, that's four rogue subclasses: Draconic Bloodline, Shadow Magic, Storm Sorcery, and Wild Magic, that I think all have a place combined with rogue. So you've definitely got options. Rogue, it's really whichever one you want, to be honest. I don't think any of them are particularly bad when you are dipping into sorcerer.
Right.
If you're dipping into rogue, you're a little bit more limited.
Right. Or again, just go to the two levels.
Or just go two levels and ignore the subclasses altogether. Yeah. Always an option.
So I guess to sum up final thoughts here, it's definitely a lot of possibilities. You just always want to be asking yourself, can I accomplish this easier with just being an arcane trickster?
Yeah.
If the answer is yes, just do that. You'll probably be better off for it. If not, if you have something specific in mind where you want to be the mastermind or the inquisitive or the assassin with magic powers, this is a good way to go about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you're going to be falling into too many traps. Maybe a couple. I don't know. Plan it out a little bit, as always, with your multi-classes.
Yeah, and try and have fun with the development of it, like the multi-class coming up, especially if you start rogue and become a sorcerer later. It's really easy, and we've even done this where it's just, it kind of happens to you with the magic imbuing you. Try and work with your DM. Make it a story moment. Make it something your character has to overcome for this to happen. could be really interesting, really cool, very memorable.
Or just deal with it when it does happen. Like, even if it is just like, you get it, just don't forget about it. You know,
we're just like immediately be okay with these like newfound right. unstable magic powers.
Right, right, right. It's like, oh, I touched this magic. It's like, oh, hey, I can cast shield now and some other stuff. And yeah, that's cool. And everyone's like,
I'm still me.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed but magic when appropriate.
Yeah, that's not great. You did give some great advice, Kevin, that I feel like we should end all of our multi-classes with. Don't forget to have fun with it. That's sure, some good yeah. advice okay. right there.
What a banal statement. If you're not having fun, you're probably not going to enjoy yourself. That's what we always say here on Monsters and Multiclass.
I thought it was dunk on your players at every opportunity.
That's the actual. As a DM, you give your players sorcerer powers and put them out for like a week. Oh, you can cast shield, but your eyes don't work anymore. That's a great way to dunk on a player.
Why do you take away their sight?
Dunked on them.
Maybe the explosion of magic that gave them their powers blinded them.
Right, of course. There you go. Okay, all right.
You just gotta like settle down, like the sediment that gets in your eyes from casting magic.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Magic eye sediment.
It's like when you wake up with eye goo, but it's magical.
Well, and everybody's got floaters, but if you're magic, like you have like thousands more floaters. That's why it sucks. It's the actual way magic works.
The unspoken downside of magic.
Yeah, you can cast fireball, but the floaters, man, they're everywhere. Oh, and you've got tinnitus all day long.
What?
Tinnitus.
Tinnitus. Oh, tinnitus. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I always add an extra tin.
Why? Rin tin tin tinnitus?
Yes.
I know, we just seem like to do that here. For the longest time, it did what? Ravnica? Or Ravinica?
Ravinica.
Mm-hmm. I like it's actually better. Ravnica.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. We're not here to pronounce stuff correctly. Jeez. What did we get yelled at for recently? It was Mordron?
Yeah, I still can't even remember. I think it was me specifically kept transposing the R and the D. It's either Modrons or Mordons, and I kept saying the wrong one.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know.
Look, if you want people to pronounce stuff right, you make your own podcast. Which I think brings us to our promotional period.
Right after we insult our listeners.
No, we're insulting our pedantic listeners.
Pedantic. I don't know if that was on purpose or not. I don't know if I want to know.
A little bit of both. Yeah. So thanks for listening so far. And if you have not yet, you can find us in a myriad of places. Wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe, leave a review. We recently set up a subreddit on Reddit so that you can make sure you never miss an episode and also comment and talk about them. We're always on to discuss things. Also, follow us on Twitter. That is monsters_multi, where you can suggest monsters and just talk D&D and whatever else. And with that, let's move on to our Monsters of the Week. This week, our monster and final entry in our Summer of Frogs adventure is going to be the Grungs. The Grungs are little frog-like humanoids who generally live in forests and jungles and take slaves and are poisonous. I think the aside from Volo in Volo's Guide to Monsters really just sums it up. Sentient, poisonous frogs that live in trees, truly the gods hate us. They are a new favorite of mine to throw at lower level parties, as they're really just different than your average goblins and whatnot, and have some great, great jumping capabilities. So, how do you guys feel about this? Let's go with Kevin, because I went to Will for the multi-class.
We don't do first thoughts with...
That's what you say, but then we do. So, what are your first thoughts?
I love these guys. So we fought them recently in a campaign Jared ran. And so before that and before reading them, I assumed they would just be... They're kind of like bullywugs, but tree frogs, where bullywugs are more like lake frogs or toads. I don't know the actual difference there.
Yeah.
But they've really managed to make them feel very, very different. They made for really interesting fights. And like I said, something very different for early levels from just gnolls and goblins and kobolds and bullywogs and whatnot.
Right. I mean, just looking at the challenge rating, it's pretty low here. I mean, for the regular grung, it's 1/4. For their elite warrior, it's 2. And then the wildling, which is their spellcaster, it's a challenge rating 1. So we're talking pretty low levels here in small numbers. But I think when I threw them at you guys, it was about 20 or so of varying types.
Yeah.
And it was against 5 level 5s. But it makes sense. They're tribal. They should be in congregations. They're not just going to be, you know, one or two wandering about. Though you could have a random encounter where you're just walking through the forest and they pop out and try and grab you. My setup was that they had already done that to a couple of people, and it was up to you guys to save them.
Right.
So it's a matter of infiltrating the grung village, which again is usually in trees, and finding these people who have been taken as slaves. As the thing that I really liked and immediately picked up on was anybody that they capture, they're not trying to eat them or kill them or do anything, I don't know, outlandish beyond feeding them poisoned food and getting them into a catatonic state to just make them be slaves. They just do whatever they want.
That's not outlandish.
Right. I realize that. As you're saying that, yeah. It is pretty crazy. It's almost worse in some ways, where they're not doing it for food. They're not doing it like the bullywogs, where it was just like to show how impressive their society was. Theirs was like comical, where the grungs, it's like pretty messed up in comparison.
Right. And it's seen, it's, they almost don't really even use them. It's like the great efficiency or benefit. They just kind of like bossing them around.
Yes.
And sort of laughing at them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Because they're one of their poisons just makes people docile and obedient.
I think it's funny that they took one of the cutest, most iconic animals, especially the exotic ones,
little poison tree dart frogs. Yeah. Yeah. Poison dart frogs. Thank you.
So freaking cute. And it's like, you know what? Let's make these lawful evil. And they look like poison dart frogs. You look at the art, it looks like if you just stretch them out and put them on two legs.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
totally.
They got big eyes. They're kind of cute.
Totally get captured by these guys. They're hilarious.
So yeah. What I loved about them and had a great time using was utilizing their long jump. They have an ability that's standing leap, where they can jump 25 feet, which is their entire speed, and just launch out at ridiculous lengths. I mean, a 25-foot long jump from standing is crazy to think about. So I really spent a lot of time thinking about that opening fight that wasn't overly intense, but basically they surrounded you all in trees. They jumped 25 feet out and then attempted to grapple you in order to trigger the constitution saving throw, because if you are touching a grung, then you have to make a DC 12 con saving throw or be poisoned. And then they just started stabbing you with daggers.
Yep.
It's a fantastic mental image. I sat there cackling to myself for like 5 minutes, and Kylo, my fiance, was right there just like staring at me. She's like, "What's going on?" I'm like, "Nothing, just preparing for D&D." And she's like, "Uh-oh." I mean, just imagine that. You just wake up surrounded by frogs and they just rip and just stab right into you as you're being poisoned. It's a good time.
Yeah, yeah, I think poisonous skin is really their standout trait.
Yeah.
The other thing that really sets them apart from any other early level stuff, it's basically if you come in contact with the skin, you have a chance of being poisoned. So if they grapple you, or if you do unarmed attacks or try and grapple them or anything like that.
And you can't even repeat the saving throw until you're no longer touching them.
Right.
So once you're poisoned, you are poisoned until you get it off you. And then you can start making the saving throw.
Right. Yeah, to try and end it. And then there's the variant, which I think you would have to use. It would be silly not to. The variants of poison. So there's a bunch of different colors of grung: green, blue, purple, red, orange, and gold. And each different color could have a different poisonous effect. So like the green ones, if they get poisoned in this way, they can't move except to climb or make standing jumps.
Which did happen to you guys a couple of times.
Right.
Basically just sit there and hop like a frog.
Right. Yeah. Blue, the poisoned creature must shout loudly or otherwise make a loud noise at the start and end of its turn. Purple, the creature feels a desperate need to soak itself in liquid or mud. It can't take actions or move except to do so or to reach a body of liquid or mud. Red, the poisoned creature must use this action to eat if food is within reach.
It's my favorite one.
Right.
Just, you get poisoned, you're like, any food within arm's reach, give me it. That's good stuff.
Yeah, orange, the frightened of its allies. And gold is charmed and can speak Grung.
Which so is really weird.
Yeah. Well, that's the one that makes that screams the slaver one to right. me. Where you're now listening to everything they say and you can communicate with them so that you can actually get orders. Sadly, all of these are tied to a DC 12 constitution saving throw. And right. that was actually the only part that, going back, I feel like I'd change around when doing this fight, is against level 5s even, you guys failed, I think, in total, with an entire session being Grungs, 2 saving throws. So, and that was with me, like, specifically trying to trigger some of these.
Right.
12 is just real low.
You gotta be really careful with that, because that really does suck.
But some of them aren't that bad. I mean, blue, the poison creature must shout loudly or otherwise make a loud noise at the start and
that's
end of its
turn. That's not the problem. The problem is you're poisoned.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you so still are poisoned in you do addition have to, remember to these
that.
Effects.
That's true. That's true. But ending it, again, if you keep it, I'm saying even at like a DC 14 constitution saving throw, that's going to be at least a little bit more interesting, possible to fail.
Right.
Once you get under 12 and 13, it's just basically easy.
Keep in mind, though, we were part of level 5s, mm-hmm. and to make this a balanced fight, you had to throw like 16 of them at us.
Right.
Which means we were a little high for these things.
Mm-hmm.
If we were level 1s or 2s and you scaled it back when we were fighting 4 or 5 of these things, that saving throw is more deadly.
Yeah. Totally agree. Specifically talking about if you were trying to throw this against 5 level 5s.
Right.
I had 20 of them.
It was an entire village.
Right. Yeah. And you guys still succeeded every single one of these. Again, that's one time. I could do this 1,000 times, and one of those times you guys would fail every single one.
Right.
So just depends on how it goes that day. But I think that all of the variant poisons are not debilitating enough that I worry about that side of the poison. It's really just the fact that now you're poisoned.
Right.
Depending on the party as well, how bad is poison? For this current party we have, you're a paladin who has 10 points of lay on hands, so that's 2 free getting rid of poisons. You know, it kind of just depends. You're, again, level 2 paladin, so it's really not too many. But in a party that has 0 way of dealing with it, maybe it's a little bit more intense and you want to be careful about that.
Right. Yeah, we also had a decent amount of lesser restorations.
Right.
Which would cure that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's always something to balance around, I guess. But, I mean, I do that all the time. Every time I look at a stat block, I just kind of use that as a starting place.
Right.
And then it's just a matter of, like, okay, now how do I make this actually a good fight? You know, mm-hmm. like, I even had you guys fight orcs the other day. It's like, you're level 5. You'd absolutely obliterate orcs. So, all right, let's look at their armor class. Maybe up that a little bit. You know, it's like, tailor it to your group.
We still obliterated those orcs.
It wasn't supposed to be
a random rolled encounter.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, that just depends what you're trying to do.
Right. So, we should probably talk about the actual stat blocks.
Yeah.
So, there's 3. The Grung Elite Warrior, and the Grung Wildlings. Grung is the base one. Challenge rating 1/4, AC of 12, hit points 11. The very much type of thing where throw them at a level 1 party and make it a little more interesting, change it up from goblins, kobolds, and gnolls. Yeah, they have 1 main attack, dagger.
Which does do poison damage if they fail. Once again, that DC 12 con
plus
4
to hit, 1d4 plus 2 piercing damage, DC 12 con save, or take an additional 2d4 poison damage.
It's low level deadly. Party.
Yeah, that is.
At level 1?
Yeah.
I don't want to mess with that.
Yeah, and they also, they have the stand and leap, the poisonous skin, they're amphibious, they're immune to poison, they have various skills in the athletics, perception, stealth, and survival, plus 4 to dex save. They're very interesting low level fights.
Right.
They give them enough to set them apart. And then there's the different colors of these, I think. I don't have it written down anywhere, but
there's 8 of them or something, or 6 of them.
Yeah.
Green, blue, purple, red, orange, gold.
Yeah, as you start getting, some of those are like the elite warriors are the gold ones.
Right.
And stuff, the base grungs, it's confined to a
green and blue.
Okay.
Yeah, just, it goes 2-2-2.
Okay.
So your green and blue ones, the poison conditions aren't too in a bad, that's like just you're poisoned, that sucks, and also here's this funny thing that happens. Yeah.
Well, the green one where you can only make standing leaps or climb, I mean, that's right. Pretty detrimental.
Right.
You can't leap that far.
Can you leap multiple times in a turn?
We had this advanced conversation where your jumping distance doesn't override your speed.
Correct.
Right.
So if I have...
Which will come up in a second, I'm sure.
A speed of like 45 somehow, but I have no strength, so my standing leap's like 7 feet. Can I jump all 45 feet, just jumping multiple times? That's a good question.
Don't see why not.
That would be an incredible feat to watch.
Is it?
In 6 seconds, jumping 45 feet in increments of 7.
Huh. Yeah, that's pretty silly.
That'd be almost more impressive than watching someone jump 45 feet.
I think I might just use that as like a, it depends on this exact scenario type deal. Like if you want to have, somebody's really weak, so you say, okay, well that's difficult terrain. But if they've got a really high strength, it's like, yeah, okay, you know, you're jumping 15 feet at a time, so maybe that kind of can make sense.
I don't know. I mean, is it that ridiculous? We have like kids do this for fun races, potato sack races.
In 6 seconds, though?
And not in lethal combat.
It'd no, but funnier I'm saying thing to watch for, in elementary
so then, yeah.
Lethal combat in elementary
school. Come on, kids, tie your legs together. We're going to start shooting arrows.
Jeez, nope.
What I'm saying is like, as a kid, I did potato sack races as an out of shape, chubby kid and did it fine leaping across the whole way. But these are trained adventurers. Yes, it's a more dangerous situation, but...
I was saying, did you time yourself? Because to me, the time constraint is the big issue here. It's not that it can't be done, that they're going to like trip and fall and they're like, oh boy, if only I had more strength. No, it's the fact that it's like, you're trying to do this in 6 seconds, 45 feet in 6 seconds. I don't know. I want to see it. Let's get some potato sacks.
I'm now just picturing, you know, your martial training. Like, master, why do we have the potato sack race? Boy, I once fought grungs. Hundreds of grungs, and I thought every day if I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared for the potato sacks.
Yeah, so, you know, I say just make a ruling on the fly. I don't think that's an important one to contact Jeremy Crawford about. That's if you want to let him jump the entire distance, let him jump. If you want to make him do a check just to see how well it goes, you know, whatever. Do something on the fly.
So I think you can just combine them. So I just pulled up the rules from the basic rules on movement and position. On your turn, you can move a distance up to your speed. You can use as much or as little of your speed as you like on your turn, following the rules here. Your movement can include jumping, climbing, and swimming. These different modes of movement can be combined with walking, or they can constitute your entire movement. However you are moving, you deduct the distance of each part of your movement from speed until it is used up or until you are done moving. So I think you could just keep jumping.
Yeah, rules as written, there are no real jump rules for combat movement.
So what if I tried jumping in water and my swim speed is 60 feet?
Oh, I don't know.
Did it say you could swim?
What's that?
Did the poison say you could swim?
You
could only move from jumping or climbing.
No, he's using that as an example of, can we just always jump for all movement regardless of this poison?
Basically. If your limitation is movement and you're in water, so you have a swim speed, is jumping now
allowed? No, jumping through the water, you mean like a dolphin?
Like a dolphin, yeah.
No, if you're in water, you're swimming. That's the rule. You can't fly in this water. Let's
hear it. Which is some bullshit.
So, I've seen birds fly all the time.
So next then is the Grung Elite Warrior, who is pretty similar to the regular Grung here. Bit higher armor class, a lot more HP at 49.
Yeah, challenge rating 2. So
challenge rating
jump.
2, yeah.
1/4 to 2.
So what they get, besides a short bow, is the Mesmerizing Chur, which is a recharge ability, meaning that after you use it on their turn, you roll a d6. If you get a 6 in this case, you get the ability back. So basically... it's an action. The Grung makes a churring noise to which Grungs are immune. Each humanoid or beast that is within 15 feet of the Grung must make a DC 12 wisdom saving throw or be stunned until the end of the Grung's next turn. Still that extremely low save.
Right.
I think I did this once or twice and maybe got...
You definitely got me with it. I remember losing a turn.
Which is good. You know, it came in handy.
Right.
But against low levels, that's pretty devastating.
Yeah. That's a big one.
Beyond that, they are just kind of a generic step up from the Grung. Yeah. It's a meteor Grung.
But dagger and +5 instead of +4 to hit.
Yeah.
+3 to damage instead of +2.
Yep.
They do also have a short bow.
Which does nice. Poison
then,
as well.
Yeah, then they have everything else the same. Amphibious, poisonous skin, standing leap. plus five to dex saves and stuff, plus four. Yeah, it's really just a step up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole bunch more hit points, though. That's right. The biggest thing. The regular Grung are probably going to be knocked out in a round,
mm-hmm.
maybe two. These ones are going to stay up for multiple rounds.
Which was exactly how I used them. It's like, here are your Grungs. These are going to be cannon fodder where you have to waste an entire turn killing it. And here's the actual problem. The elite ones who are just going to keep hitting you and getting that chur off and maybe causing real big problems. So then last is the Grung Wildling. Once again, the spellcaster of the group. So they're... main interesting spells were plant growth and spike growth. So plant growth was the one that was like 120 foot radius where you just make, or 100 foot radius, and the area becomes double. What is it?
Range.
Oh, never mind. Never misread.
Yeah, the radius is 100 feet. The area becomes double difficult terrain where every foot of movement now takes 4 feet of movement. So that was a really good way of just like locking down the bottom area.
Well, we should probably give a little details on our encounter with them.
Sure.
We were tasked to go find this missing woman, and we tracked her down to a lake, and there were signs that she was there, but that was it. While we were there, we were attacked by Grux. It was just an ambush. We beat them pretty easily, but they ran away, and we almost just let them leave, and then somebody thought, oh shit, maybe we should follow them. So we followed them, and we found their entire village where this woman was being trapped as a slave, along with a couple other. And we were talking dozens and dozens and dozens of Grungs, more than we could handle. It was a treetop village, like 45 feet into the air. There were some really crappy bridges connecting different huts, but the Grungs could also jump. So we were trying to figure out how to save these people without fighting the entire camp.
How did that work out? the entire camp, didn't
we? We fought half the camp.
It's true.
Yeah, we set a fire to distract them, then climbed up into the trees, but some stayed back to guard them, and we got in a fight with them up in the trees, and we were completely intending to have to run away with the prisoners once we got them out, and then the plant growth happened, making it basically impossible.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was a really great use of that.
Yep. Yeah, I think I burned our life clerics, every single dispel magic that they had.
Yep.
Because I had like three or four wildlings, and they each have 2 third-level spell slots, and then the spike growth as well, which can combo with the plant growth, because I believe plant growth is not concentration, and then spike growth is. So you can make this 100-foot radius of double difficult terrain, and then call up spike growth where the actual concentration of people is, and now you're making a 20-foot radius, just not only difficult terrain, which I don't know if that would have made it even more difficult terrain. I wasn't concerned about that. But that makes you do 2d4 piercing damage for every 5 feet you travel through it. No save or anything. So it wasn't like some crazy amounts of damage, but it was just like stacking this stuff and just continuing to layer it.
Right.
So that anybody who was on the ground and trying to move, which two people were, were just like getting really frustrated in, I think, a hopefully fun how do we figure this out way.
Right. Yeah, and from a psychological warfare perspective, that's fucking terrible. Terrible, terrifying, terrible. It's so you do the plant growth. So you're like standing on like a forest floor where it's, you know, pretty open and all that except for trees. And then all of a sudden you're just engulfed in thick bush that's impossible to move through. And then as you're doing that and getting shot from afar and poison frogs are leaping down on you, the plants start growing spikes and dig into you as you continue to move, making it even harder and ripping your skin apart.
This was so far my favorite encounter this entire campaign. I was so proud of it.
That was an intense one.
It was. I think it took almost all session to do that encounter.
Yeah. It was worthwhile.
Yeah.
They also have jump, which I thought, we talked about, I misused this, which I was okay with, but
of course you were.
Of course I was. Yeah. It didn't really affect that much. That wasn't your main thing you had to deal with. But jump allows you to triple somebody's jump distance. I think it's triple.
Yes,
it's not loaded.
Yeah.
So you can triple your jump distance, which for a Grung is 25 feet. So in theory, they have a jump distance of 75 feet. But as we just discussed, their limiting factor is going to be their total speed, which does not go up with this. So they have 25 feet that they can jump per turn, but their jump still goes 75 feet, meaning that they can jump 75 feet over the course of 3 turns. Which is hilarious to think about. because you just have floating space grungs. Just very slowly over 18 seconds, just boing. And they can still make attacks. There's nothing limiting them
right,
there.
As they're just flying through the air.
Right. Yeah. So I didn't use it like that. I almost wish I did.
Right. Yeah, you used it where, since it specifically called out standing leap, mm-hmm. as they could do their movement, and then in addition to that, jump an additional 25 feet. So basically right. effectively making their movement 50 feet.
Right, which should have taken a dash action to do.
Right.
So they were moving 25 feet, jumping 25 feet, and then grappling.
Right.
Which is too much in one
yeah,
turn.
Yeah, it made for some cool images. They're right. like, again, as the two party members are on the forest floor fighting through this plant growth, the grungs with also a climb speed running down the tree to the base of it and then leaping off of it over the plants onto their heads.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of great. It was.
Yes, that was entirely a, you know, it's like I kind of thought it probably should go the other way and not allow them to do it all in one turn, but I don't know. I knew it wasn't going to kill you guys.
Yeah. Each individual one was low enough challenge rating. That was all
right. Right.
But we did have to correct it, because then the kind of logical extension of that is like, my character has 13 strength. They can make a leap of 13.
Every single turn.
Yeah, so he can run his 30 feet of movement and then leap an additional 13 feet if we do it that way, which is
right.
Not right.
I'm sure there's a lot of groups that really don't care about the rules, so they have like 2-3 years of sessions where that is the norm. Everyone does their full movement and then jumps. And then one guy, like new guy, comes to the table like, what the fuck are you people doing?
I can see it.
So you might have learned something today on Monsters of Multiclass about jumping.
The main thing that I had to kind of go back and forth between when using these wildlings is they're like deciding on what was most important to concentrate on, because they had spike growth, which I already said is concentration, but they also have bark skin, which I think can be cast on anyone. Yeah, a creature that you touch gets a... Oh, wait, that's on Cure Wounds. Bark skin. Is, yeah, you touch a willing creature and their AC becomes 16. Yeah. So, in theory, I could have had all of the wildlings either have 16 AC themselves or give 16 AC to, like,
the Elite Warriors.
The Elite Warriors, yeah. Which would have made them a good bit tougher.
Yeah, I mean, they have 13, so bump it up to 16.
Exactly,
good.
Exactly.
15%.
I decided, just because of the whole, I knew that you guys would be fighting from the forest floor, that like it made more sense to go with the plant growth, spike growth combo. But it's definitely, you know, depending on your scenario, one of those is going to make more sense. If you're in, I don't know, just an area where all of you are just like really condensed and the frogs can't do much about it, then they'll probably go into bark skin mode.
Right.
Yeah, like a team of wildlings supporting the elite warrior. That would make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they also have cure wounds.
Yep.
And then 4 slots of that at first level, and of course upcasted as well. So yeah, they could really do a good job supporting the elite warriors.
Right.
So that encircle, like you have the wildlings in the middle and elite warriors encircling them.
Exactly.
Smart enough for that, I don't know.
They are. I mean, they have decent intelligence. It's 10 for the wildlings. Yeah, I think all of them, 10 intelligence. It's not bad. It's enough to form some strategies.
Right.
As it's been said before, the monsters should be able to fight at the best of their abilities because they are that monster. Just like a PC should be able to fight with all of their abilities at their best. They're not going to be like, huh, would my character really know to cast Fireball when they're all grouped up like that? Yes. Yes, they would. Cast Fireball. Stop being an idiot. So what I really drew me to the Grungs is that I feel like depending on what you're going for, you can have very different fights. Where I did that, where it was a village of Grungs and they're kind of all supporting each other. But you could have it where, again, it's just like one elite warrior that a couple of wildlings are very focused on keeping alive and maybe, you know, throwing some disadvantages. That's a horrible way of saying it. Some bad stuff your way. Some debuffs your way. How about that? With the plant growth and spike growth. But it's up to you. There's a lot of options.
Right.
But without a doubt, force the Grungs to jump and grapple. That's not like really specified, but because they have +2 to athletics, that was what tipped that off to me, is they have at least some benefit to grappling, or like at least are kind of okay with it. So leap on people, grapple them, poison them, hold on for dear life, and just keep stabbing in.
Right.
Whew, loved it.
Yeah.
You guys should fight Grungs again.
That's on you.
Jared, this is the 5th session in a row that you've just thrown Grungs at us.
It's like an ecological catastrophe waiting to happen. How many grungs could there possibly be if we fight all of them?
How would it affect the ecosystem if all of the grungs in the forest died?
I have no idea.
I have no idea either, but we're going to figure it out.
Explore it.
A lot more flies, maybe. I don't know.
A lot less people being enslaved, which, you know, it's probably a good thing.
Oh, yes, the circle of life. Getting enslaved by small frog monsters. Just as nature intended.
They're so cute. All right, that's all I've got for the grungs. Anything else?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Next time on Monsters and Multiclass.
Join us as we discuss the Barbarian Ranger Multiclass and then the Bahir from the Monster Manual. Goodbye, Summer of Frogs.